Accession number 17364, Reel 3.
Mr. Viner, Reel 3. You were telling me this story of the German who tried to befriend you.
Yes. I eventually considered to use him, as he was married to a Czech. He had a Czech wife and was living in Prague, that if he would go on one of his holidays to find out about the fate of my parents and my sister and my grandmother, whom I left in Prague in 1939. And I gave him a bar of Canadian chocolate for his child, which he maintained has never in her life has eaten chocolate, which was quite possible. If the child was 2 or 3 years old, there was no chocolate available in Central Europe. But I've never heard from him again, except the fact that he was not detailed anymore from his commanding officer to come to our farm to bring prisoners and collect Red Cross parcels. But he sent me a message via another German soldier to say that he is still trying to do what he has promised. And this German soldier immediately reported to his commanding officer there is a link between a German soldier and a British prisoner of war, and he was arrested and I was arrested, and his wife was searched in Prague, and a huge amount of black market contraband was confiscated in his flat, and he was consequently brought to a court-martial in Prague, in Breslau, which is now Poland, called Breslau. And I was brought to this court-martial in January 1945 as crown witness against this German soldier, whom I met in a corridor in the vast garrisons of this town,
Breslau.
And I met him by chance under guard, and all he said to me is, I don't have to worry because he will be commuted to death for what he's done, but it will take many months, and by that time the war will be over. Which he was probably right. But in January, after the court, because after I spent a few days at the court martial in Breslau, and when I was returned to the working farm where I spent 3 years, all my colleagues were marched away, and I was only brought back because my guardsman had his railway papers written out. My company was, my working commando was moved already back to the main camp because of the Russian advance.
So how did you come into contact with the Gestapo?
The Gestapo arrested me one morning on the farm and brought me to the nearest town, which is called Ratibor, which is Poland nowadays, where they interrogated me at length. until I realized that it has to do with the my dealing with this soldier, with this German soldier.
Do you remember his name?
Oh, yes, 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 yes.
What was the name of
him? Alfred Runge. Yes, I remember his name.
How did the Gestapo treat you?
The Gestapo were three or four men sitting at desks, and a lady stenographer was sitting in the same room and writing everything down. And they asked several questions. They asked endless questions. But one particular Gestapo man, they were in civilian clothes, made an anti-Semitic attack by asking me why I left Czechoslovakia and if there was not enough money to be made or people to be baited, and that's why I left. Or if I came back for that reason. And I only remember to telling him that when I came back, I was not seeking business. I came with a rifle, with a mounted bayonet. He said, because I am not an animal to be kicked out of my home. I was kicked out from Hitler, and I fight Hitler with my rifle. That is why I came back. And next to this anti-Semitic outburst sat obviously the senior Gestapo man and put his hand on this younger officer on his sleeve, because he didn't want to create an unfriendly atmosphere in the under interrogation. And this officer never again asked a question at this interview. Eventually, they wanted to incarcerate me in the local police station in Ratibor, because the Gestapo headquarters was the local police station. But unknown to me at the interrogation was a German army warrant officer who had in civil life a degree in law, as some kind of a chief clerk of a court, chief clerk or something like that. And this German warrant officer objected to the Gestapo that he will not allow me to be incarcerated in a civilian or police prison, because I am German army subject to the German army. And there was an argument between them in front of me, but the warrant officer succeeded, and I was transferred for 3 or 4 days into a French prisoner of war camp in town. So the German army was careful about the so-called Jewish prisoners of war.
Did, when you appeared at the court-martial, I think you were asked to swear on Mein Kampf.
Yes, that was some months later. Yes, I mixed up here something. The interrogation and the court-martial were a few months in between. Yes. The court-martial was when the Russians were approaching. What did you ask me?
About Mein Kampf.
Yeah. I was in front of three or four German generals. The accused had a German officer with a black talar around, obviously acting as his defense counsel. And I was given the book of Hitler Mein Kampf to swear the truth or nothing but the truth. But the German generals did not proceed. They started to mumble between themselves because they obviously said, how can we ask a Jew to swear on Hitler's book to speak the truth and nothing but the truth? They realized they made a mockery of
or even a British soldier
or a British soldier.
Did the Germans ever find out that you had an Austrian passport?
They didn't ask. They didn't ask.
Maybe they just assumed you had a Czech passport.
They didn't ask.
What was the outcome of the court-martial?
I could never find out. Because he was sentenced at a different date. And I never met him again.
Was this the only contact you had with the Gestapo whilst you were a prisoner of war?
With the Gestapo, yes.
But I think there was another occasion when a detachment of German soldiers gave a volley of rifle shots over the grave of a POW who had died, who was in fact a Jew.
Oh yes, oh yes.
Can you tell me about that?
Oh yes, yes, yes. It was it must have been December 1941 when in the biggest British prisoner of war camp was Stalag 8B in Upper Silesia, when a sergeant died aged about 30-ish of cancer and was given a military funeral. And of which I have a photograph of the grave and of the funeral. And he was given, we were giving a prisoner of war currency in marks and pfennigs, and we were giving a few pence each day from the Germans, and we collected together a few marks and were allowed to buy a wreath with some flowers from the civilian population, and the horse and the cart was brought with a coffin, and we had an elderly religious Jew who said the burial prayer in Hebrew, and the German shot a volley of flanks over his grave.
What was his name, the POW?
Yes, it's...
Is this in your memoirs?
Yes, it's in my... open the book.
Never mind.
All right.
We can...
I just got. Yes. Haven't got the name.
Now, when the Russians approached, you went on this death march westwards to get
yes.
away from the Russians.
Yes, yes.
And I think you had some contact on that death march with Holocaust victims. Can
yes.
you tell me what happened?
We were marching for approximately January till April through Germany, and so were concentration camp inmates of concentration camps which the Germans liquidated before the Russian advance. The conditions were inhuman for us, and of course much worse were they for the inmates of concentration camp, because I, for instance, was working for 3 years on a farm, and I had reasonably good food. We were working outside in good conditions. Physically, we were in first class health, and we actually ate better than the German population, because we had Red Cross parcels on top of the German food. The Anglophile farm owner gave us much more food than he was allowed, and so we were in physically good conditions, and we could live off our fat for months and months. But the KZ inmates, who were skeletons, were brought out from their various concentration camps or working parties, and the group I met was an old discarded steel cable about an inch thick, of God knows what it had previously been used for. And across this steel cable were hundreds and hundreds of wooden buttons fixed across, and each button, about two of each side of the cable, inmates held onto the wooden button with pyjama clad wooden clogs and no gloves, and the freezing cold. And they held on with their hands to the wooden button not to fall over, because they didn't have enough strength to stand up. And the whole column moved, but you couldn't see. The movement was so slow that you thought they were stationary. And at the end of that cable were two or three wagons, farmers' carts, where they collected the dead. And we, of course, marched. We were a column of about 5,000 approximately, and we overtook them, because they couldn't stride out on ice and snow. That was the one experience I had with these concentration inmates on their move.
Could the POWs do anything for them?
We couldn't do anything for them at that juncture. We not that, but I was able to help concentration camps inmates at a coal mine some months previously.
How did you help them?
Well, our farm draw the coal supply from a, maybe only during the war, from a coal mine direct, in wagons of being pulled, two or three wagons being pulled by a tractor on the roads. And on one of these visits, to the coal mine, we saw that we had to drive the empty wagon on a weighbridge to weigh, then drive under a chute where the coal came from the top into the wagon from above, but lumps of coal fell off the walls of the wagon into the snow, and around this like a silo but not dispensing with greens or foodstuff but coal, and around this silo were a group of about 20 youngish KZ inmates in their pyjamas, supposed to pick up the lumps of coal which fell off into the snow to throw them back with a shovel onto the truck. So we approached them. We were next. We were four or five prisoners of war dressed in green army overcoats with polished buttons, polished boots, because it was an outing. We went there all day going to the coal mine and back. We dressed our best, and we looked like soldiers. We probably even polished our army coat brass buttons, because appearance was important. In front of the German, we were wearing military bearings, because the Germans were impressed by that. That was the only way you could improve your standing with the Germans. We approached these youngsters and spoke to them, and we could speak a number of languages, even if only a few words. They couldn't speak German. We said, "Sprechen Sie Deutsch?" They shied away. So the next language was in these areas was being spoken. So we said, "Mluvisz po polsku? Do you speak Polish?" They were afraid of us. We thought maybe French, because they could be from they're afraid. We tried Yiddish, which is a language which would have been spoken in these areas. No, they were afraid of us. So one of our friends said to him a few words which every Jew knows, because it's every prayer starts with the words, which is Lord O God, our God is one, which is I just can't, I'm getting a bit tired.
It's Hebrew word.
It's Hebrew, yes. And
never mind, it's all
right. Yeah. And at the moment we said, just let me get back to that for a minute.
The words will come to you later. Happened.
Yeah. Slight case of senility that I get certain things which are very you just can't get back to it. And then they realized, they did not believe that we are Jews too. They were afraid we could have been Hungarians, Slovaks, Ukrainians, Belgian Flemists, all fighting with the Germans. We couldn't have been worse than the Nazis, because they tried to be more papal than the Pope, those other nationalities. So then they said, "You are Jewish?"
So where had they come from?
Well, that I did not know then, but I found out later, years later. They were those young Jews who were brought at 1944 from the Greek islands, of whom Austrian Chancellor was known to be photographed in Yugoslavia. Waldheim. Those Greek island Jews spoke only Greek, but I only realized later that they would have spoken another language, those youngsters. They would have spoken Ladino, which is Spanish as it was spoken in the 14th century, and they are Sephardic Jews who definitely, all in Greece, were Sephardic Jews who spoke as a second language Ladino, which is Spanish. But of course we had nobody between us who would have spoken it at the time, but that would have been the only language. But what we could do is we immediately had our sandwiches from our farm with us, and these sandwiches were not like English cucumber sandwiches. A sandwich was probably weighing a quarter of a pound, because it was bread like that in size. German, we had as prisoners of war on the farm, we were the only one, and the farm laborers, who had bread free. The German population had bread rationed. We could, our farm boss said, eat as much as you like. So bread was free. It was unbelievable. But of course, he could do that. A farmer could eat. So we gave them all our sandwiches, and I had, my uncle was living in West Byfleet at that time. He got out of Czechoslovakia by way of a transport before the outbreak of the war. The Labour Party gave 1,000 families of the German Social Democrat Labour Party in Czechoslovakia, offered them to take them from Czechoslovakia over Poland before the outbreak of the war to England, to Norway, to England, and then to Canada as a gesture of brotherly gesture of the Labour Party. And my uncle was a lifelong member of the Social Democratic Socialist Party in Czechoslovakia, and he was offered 24 hours to make up your mind to go with his wife and my cousin, his son, and they finished up in England, because they never got any further. The outbreak of the war left them, and they were distributed in England, and they lived for many years in West Byfleet in a beautiful mansion provided by the Czech Trust Fund, because there was Czech money in England, pre-war gold reserves, etc. And they were offered by a British tobacco firm to send a monthly parcel of 200 cigarettes each month